This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Ministry spokesman hails as a legal victory the UN's top court ruling that it can hear Tehran's bid to overturn Washington's sanctions. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu appears in court to formally respond to corruption charges against him. Amnesty International says the French police made dozens of arbitrary arrests during a protest against the security bill in early December. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafieh. Good to have you with us. Now, beginning with our top story, Iran saying it's the United States that has to return to the 2015 nuclear deal, which it withdrew from unilaterally.
We will wait for the U.S. to return to the deal and fulfill all its commitments. If they do so, we will also immediately resume complying with the agreement. Iran is still part of the JCPOA, but it is the U.S. that left the deal.
Hatibzadeh says that Tehran has scaled down its commitments in response to the failure of other signatories to fulfill their obligations. He said that the U.S. has the opportunity now to return to the agreement and compensate for its wrong policies. The spokesman also hailed a recent ruling by the International Court of Justice to take on Iran's bid to overturn U.S. sanctions. He called it a legal victory in the international arena. Now, those remarks are made after the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution emphasized that the country's stance will not change as regards the JCPOA.
Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says the country will return to full compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal only if the United States lifts all its sanctions first. The Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA, is the name of the nuclear deal Iran clinched in 2015 with world powers, including the US. But America withdrew from the accord under former President Donald Trump and reinstated anti-Iran sanctions. Now, the new president, Joe Biden, says the US will return to the deal, but Iran must first return to full compliance. Iran rejects this, arguing that it was the US that exited the accord and breached its commitments. Ayatollah Khamenei says it is the definitive and irreversible policy of Iran that the U.S. should first lift its sanctions. The leader also says that it's Iran that has the right to set conditions on the nuclear deal, as it has fulfilled all its commitments under the agreement. The leader's comments follow calls by some Western countries to renegotiate the Iran deal and expand it beyond its nuclear program.
But I do believe that we do need to finalize indeed a new negotiation with Iran, and President Biden has a critical role. We have to address as well the ballistic missiles issues, and we have to address the stability of the region. And this comprehensive agenda is to be negotiated now.
Iran has time and again stressed that the JCPOA is non-negotiable. The country rolled back some of its commitments in May 2019, exactly a year after the US pullout. Iran did so after the European countries in the JCPOA, namely France, Britain and Germany, failed to make up for the US withdrawal. Tehran has repeatedly said its rolling back measures are fully reversible once other parties fulfill their commitments. Iran says the ball is now in U.S. court. It says President Biden should now decide on whether to continue the policies of his predecessor or choose a new path. Those policies by Trump under his so-called maximum pressure campaign have already been described as a failure even by some of Washington's closest allies.
Now, in other news, Iranian scientists say that the human trial of COVPARS, the second indigenous to develop coronavirus vaccine, will start next week. In a press conference, the scientists said that the vaccine's verification will be carried out in several stages. COVPARS is administered both through injection and inhalation. The vaccine has already been tested on animals successfully. It's been developed by the RAZI Vaccine and Serum Research Institute, one of the most important medical research centers in West Asia. Now we have Salman Gujari, our correspondent, live for us there at the venue of that press conference. Salman, this is good news again. This is the second Iranian vaccine that's being developed, and we hear that a human trial is going to start soon. Walk us through the different stages it has to undergo.
Well, Baris, I'm talking to you from RAZI Institute. As you already know, we had a press conference here at this institute. Developers came onto the stage and briefed the journalists on what are the nature or different aspects of the RAZI COVPARS vaccine. In order to give you a much more update, Behrouz, I'm now joined by the spokesman of the RAZI Institute, who's also a spokesperson for the production of COVPARS vaccine. Thank you so much for joining us here. Mamnunam az shoma bekhatere inke dar in mosahebe shirkat
kardin. Thank you very much for taking part in the interview. Tell us more about the specifications of the vaccine and its design and also its effectiveness. The vaccine produced by RAZI Institute is recombinant protein vaccine, and it has been tested on animals, including rabbits and rats, and the African green monkey. So it has its safety has been tested, and we have been also going through its effectiveness of its immunization in monkeys. So there are two dosages to be injected, and also there's a dosage for inhalation. There has been pre-trial studies, and 14 days after receiving the shot, the person will be immunized. We have the new design, in which case the person has to inhale the vaccine. So a person who is vaccinated in the form of injection, there is still the possibility that the transmission chain may not be cut off. So there's the spraying of the vaccine, and it activates the defensive system in the respiratory system, and we will later inform you about other details. Is the WHO some supervising the process of production, or is it just Iran's Food and Drug Administration? Based on health protocols, the Food and Drug Administration in every country has the authorization to monitor and supervise the production and use of vaccines. Our Food and Drug Administration is not an exception, but almost 10 years ago, our Food and Drug Administration received the authorization from the WHO for issuing certificates about food and vaccines and similar products. So this has been endorsed by the WHO. But in some countries, in addition to the Food and Drug Administration, there may be also the need for authorization by the WHO. The protocols prepared by our Food and Drug Administration are similar to the ones by the WHO, and therefore, such vaccines are also going to be approved by the WHO, and this takes place in the third phase, in the latest stages of the third phase of trial. But the WHO, along with the Food and Drug Administration, can proceed with the vaccine producing team. I think it's the first time that we have a vaccine that is used in the form of inhalation. You're right, this is the first time that we are producing vaccines for inhalation. As far as I have studied, Cuba is also preparing a similar vaccine, and there's also a seasonal flu vaccine that is used in the same way.
Well, there is, I just talked to Dr. Fallah, who is the spokesperson of RASi Institute, who is in charge of developing the newly developed vaccine, RASi-CoV-PARS vaccine, which is, whose human trial is going to begin next week on 130 volunteers. Mm-hmm. It will be carried out at three stages. So in due time, I'll get you more updates, and definitely we'll follow up all the stages in due time, and we'll bring you reports about how this vaccine will work out. Back to Behrouz.
Sure. Okay. Thank you very much for that, Salman Kujuri, our correspondent there at the site of the unveiling of this newly developed Iranian vaccine. Now, the chief commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps has said that hundreds of new military vessels will become operational and join the country's navy.
Earlier in this year, more than 100 combat frigates and later more than 200 attack drones. And later, we had the new ship that became operational for sailing in oceans.
Salami says that the Islamic Republic will continue to enhance its defense capability in the face of enemy threats. He said that this includes enhancing potentialities in air, surface, and subsurface systems. The IRGC commander noted that Iran's recent military improvements show that the U.S. maximum pressure campaign has failed, thanks to Iranian people's steadfastness and resilience. He stressed that Iranian nation should rely on its capacities in all fields, including the economy. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu appears in court to formally respond to corruption charges against him. He has pleaded not guilty to all the charges. The Monday hearing marks the beginning of trial proper, with subsequent sessions focused on testimony and evidence. A large crowd of protesters have gathered outside the court in Jerusalem of Quds. Netanyahu was charged last year over allegations of accepting improper gifts and seeking to trade regulatory favor with media moguls in exchange for positive coverage. He claims to be the victim of a witch hunt, though. The trial is scheduled May 4th, Netanyahu to appear in court multiple times a week. Let's now go to Ramallah. We have our correspondent, Mona Kandil, there. Mona, tell us about this court hearing and what's going to happen next.
Well, today is Netanyahu's second appearance in court in Jerusalem, Al-Quds. And as you said, Netanyahu told the court that he's not guilty and of one charge of bribery, three charges of fraud, breach of a trust. Less than 1 hour from the beginning of the trial, Netanyahu was seen leaving the court, of course, with the permission. His lawyers are still in the court. The trial is still going on. However, the judge would be hearing witnesses maybe in late February, and others are saying that the witnesses will come to court maybe after the Israeli elections, 6 weeks from now. That's why Netanyahu is trying to gain more time, according to experts. He's not afraid of the of his trial or the hearing, knowing that maybe the upcoming elections would save him. At the same time, those anti-Netanyahu policies, let's say, according to the Israeli media, Netanyahu's haters held a demonstration outside the court. They were demanding that he must be punished and not be the prime minister for another period of time. At the same time, his supporters were also appearing outside the court trying to defend Netanyahu. Netanyahu is the first Israeli prime minister to be facing such a trial while he's still the premier of the Israeli regime.
Okay, we'll wait and see if it's a kangaroo court or a real one. Thank you very much for that, Mona Candela, correspondent in Ramallah. Palestinian human rights organizations have welcomed the International Criminal Court's ruling that its jurisdiction extends to Palestinian territories occupied by Israel since 1967. Ashraf Shannon has a report.
Palestinian human rights organizations have hailed the decision by the International Criminal Court, ICC, after affirming that the court has full territorial jurisdiction over the occupied Palestinian territories, including the occupied West Bank, Jerusalem al-Quds, and the Gaza Strip. Al-Mizan Center for Human Rights, together with its partners, stressed that immediate action must be taken by ICC Chief Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda to investigate Israeli atrocities and ensure justice and accountability for Palestinian victims. For decades, the Israeli regime has been causing pain and suffering for Palestinians. It has waged three wars on the Gaza Strip and has kept the tiny enclave under crippling blockade. Tel Aviv has also increased illegal settlement activities in the occupied West Bank and in Jerusalem al-Quds.
This is a very important decision, and Palestinians have been waiting for it, because it might finally bring them justice after many years of Israeli occupation and crimes. The crimes have been systematic and taking place on a daily basis.
Families of war victims in Gaza say the ICC decision is a step in the right direction towards achieving justice. They demanded that Israeli leaders be held accountable for their crimes.
Israel has killed eight members of my family because it felt that it would get away with it. Today, we want justice for our loved ones.
The ICC must prosecute Israel for its war crimes during the last three wars on Gaza because of its forces killed and injured thousands of innocent and unarmed Palestinians, including my son.
For decades, the Israeli regime has demonstrated zero accountability to crimes perpetrated by its soldiers. Rights groups demand accountability mechanisms to ensure that Israeli perpetrators are brought to justice in accordance with international law. Experts say that Tel Aviv's crimes against Palestinians will continue to go unpunished as long as it enjoys protection from the United States.
Israeli forces have killed and injured thousands of Palestinian civilians in the Gaza Strip since 2008, acts that amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. Ashraf Shannon, Gaza.
Amnesty International has described as arbitrary the detentions during Paris protests against the controversial security bill on December 12th last year. A French branch of the Global Rights Watchdog said that out of 142 people arrested, including 124 taken into custody, 80% faced no charges in the end. The watchdog says it has, quote, legitimate concerns over the possibility that there were arbitrary arrests and other violations of human rights during the demonstrations. Controversial legislation, which has since been scrapped, would have restricted publication with so-called malicious intent of photos of on-duty police officers. The move was condemned as a curb on press freedom, triggering widespread rallies in France in December last. Myanmar's police used water cannon to disperse people protesting a military coup that led to the arrest of de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi. In the capital, Naypyidaw, demonstrators chanted anti-coup slogans. They demanded immediate release of Suu Kyi and urged the military to hand power back to the elected politicians. Similar events were held in Yangon and several other cities. Suu Kyi and key government officials were arrested by the military in a pre-dawn raid last week. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. From the very heart of evergreen forests, under the starry sky of the desert, with the radiance of silver-colored sand, in the midst of proud mountains. Closer, Iran.
Hello, I am Mitra, an Iranian nature traveler. To know more about the wonders and beauties of magnificent Iran, keep me company.
سکوت کوهستان چشم می گشاید شب در سپید دم تاریخ
و فراج هفت قلعه تو در تو به نام نامی ایزد به نشان یک تا پرستی
My beautiful country, Iran, is an ancient land. Today we are going to take a trip to the heart of the history of Iran, to a very old site in the beautiful city of Hamadan, to Hekmatane Hill. Hekmatane Hill is an ancient hill dating back to 3,000 years ago. This hill is home to an underground city which dates back to the era of Medes. The area of this hill is about 30 hectares, which sits in the northern part of the old city of Hamadan. According to archaeologists and researchers, the site has relics of three historical eras of Medes, Achaemenids, and Parthians. The result of scientific excavations is the emergence of a vast ancient city, a kind of chessboard architecture of Parthian era. This unique complex, in addition to having advanced system of water pipelines, has an adobe wall with a diameter of about 10 meters, which has huge towers in certain distances. The main structure of the ancient city of Hekmatane is made of adobe and partially bricks in some districts. I am now at the entrance of the complex of Hekmatane Hill. In order to reach the ancient structures of this complex, I have to walk a little. Hamadan is very cold in this time of the year. I better zip up my hood or I will freeze. am now in Hikmatane Museum. This museum has really attractive sections. Next to me, on the ground, there is a window showcase. I better get closer to see what's inside. Oh my god! Human skeleton! This skeleton dates back to 2,500 years ago. This human skeleton seems to have brought legs close to stomach, as if squatting, leaning forward from the waist. Well, next to it, there are clay pots. I am now in the ancient city of Hikmatane. Here, there are building units which have a central yard, and the stores have been built around them symmetrically. To be honest, I can't imagine the real existence of these houses in my mind. These houses and the passages between them date back to several thousand years ago. Here is much different from the kind of conception we have about city or home. Much different. Oh, these ancient sites make us contemplate more. Who used to live here? What was it like living in this place? Well, I have to walk so that I could think better. How cold is it here? Until next time, goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
The debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Iran will return to its commitments under the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action if the United States first lifts all sanctions, not on paper, but in actuality. That is according to the leader of Iran's revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. He says that the U.S. and its three Western signees of the agreement are in no place to make demands because they did not abide by their commitments to begin with. U.S. President Joe Biden has now announced that his country will not lift sanctions on Iran unless Iran backs off its enrichment of uranium. Well, stay with us as we take a look at the latest in the saga of the JCPOA drama on this debate.
Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says the country will return to full compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal only if the United States lifts all its sanctions first. The Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA, is the name of the nuclear deal Iran clinched in 2015 with world powers including the U.S. But America withdrew from the accord under former President Donald Trump and reinstated anti-Iran sanctions. Now, the new president, Joe Biden, says the U.S. will return to the deal, but Iran must first return to full compliance. Iran rejects this, arguing that it was the U.S. that exited the accord and breached its commitments. Ayatollah Khamenei says it is the definitive and irreversible policy of Iran that the U.S. should first lift its sanctions. The leader also says that it's Iran that has the right to set conditions on the nuclear deal, as it has fulfilled all its commitments under the agreement. The leader's comments follow calls by some Western countries to renegotiate the Iran deal and expand it beyond its nuclear program.
But I do believe that we do need to finalize indeed a new negotiation with Iran, and President Biden has a critical role. We have to address as well the ballistic missiles issues, and we have to address the stability of the region, and this comprehensive agenda is to be negotiated now.
Iran has time and again stressed that the JCPOA is non-negotiable. The country rolled back some of its commitments in May 2019, exactly a year after the U.S. pullout. Iran did so after the European countries in the JCPOA, namely France, Britain and Germany, failed to make up for the U.S. withdrawal. Tehran has repeatedly said its rolling back measures are fully reversible once other parties fulfill their commitments. Iran says the ball is now in U.S. court. It says President Biden should now decide on whether to continue the policies of his predecessor or choose a new path. Those policies by Trump under his so-called maximum pressure campaign have already been described as a failure, even by some of Washington's closest allies.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program, Elijah Magni, a journalist and political analysts out of Brussels, and Tohid Asadi, academic and Iranian affairs analysts out of Tehran. Thank you both for being with us. I'd like to start this off with Elijah. Why would there be expectations for Iran to make the first move when Iran did not leave the JCPOA and only scaled up its uranium enrichment years after the U.S. left the deal and when other signatories did not implement their side of the agreement?
I think it's a question of who gives up first on its right. And in this way, here today, we have the Americans who pulled out, and the Iranians cannot trust the U.S. administration. But the most important thing, what Sayyid Khamenei said today, is not repeating the same thing that was said in the last month, that it is up to the Americans to prove their commitment and their compliance and their respect the deal that they came out from. What is the most important, what he said, is if they want Iran to return, the U.S. must lift all sanctions, but we will verify. And if it is done properly, we will return to our commitment. Now, that is the most important part. It's because Iran doesn't trust the Americans, and Biden can say, okay, we're returning, now you go back and stand back on all the steps that you've taken. But that's not enough, because even in 2015, when Barack Obama signed the deal, he did not lift all sanctions. He did not apply all the deal that he himself signed, and all the European companies were hesitant in a striking deal with Iran because the sanctions were not lifted on all banks. That means even if the U.S. said tomorrow, okay, we accept to make the first step and we will respect the deal, then Iran will not jump in and say, okay, we pull back on all the steps. Iran needs to wait and see if the American administration is going to be truthful, which I doubt, because the difference between Obama and Trump and Biden today is not very big. It's just only how vocal is the president, mm-hmm. and the commitment is always the same.
Okay.
The U.S. administration has no interest in seeing Iran strong.
Well, Tohid, what about what Elijah has said? What would be the problem? I mean, Iran, as you know, said today that there is no other way for it to abide by its commitments unless the sanctions are totally lifted off of Tehran first. Now, what exactly is wrong with that demand? Because we have seen now, we've heard from the U.S. administration saying something different.
Well, basically, Biden and his administration have been trying to pretend that they are different from the previous administration. But the thing is that the patterns and the trajectories of foreign policies followed by two administrations are, in a sense, similar, and it gives a very negative signal to Iran. Getting back to your question, I think it's not really the matter of who takes the first step, because the two sides of the story are not really in the same under the same circumstances. Seeing the fact that the United States was the country that started to withdraw from the deal basically in a very unilateral way and with no logical reason behind. So all in all, I think Iran has been always open for any kind of talks and negotiations. But on the other hand, Iran has got this very failed experience of going through the trajectory of negotiations, not only for the process which resulted in JCPOA, but also over the past four decades. And whenever Tehran has tried this path of talks, the outcome from the Western side has been a lack of commitment, and the lack of trust resulted by this lack of commitment. What we hear today from Iran's supreme leader could be very much summarized in one single sentence, and that is Iran's only requirement and Iran's only, let's say, request is one single word, which is commitment. And so far, we have not seen this commitment, basically not from the United States and not from the European Union, with just a little bit of difference. That the EU countries try to pretend that they are trying to do something with just putting out some nice words, some verbal statements, but nothing in practice. And the United States was almost clear from the day one when Trump, let's say, took the office. So Iran's tendency to start negotiations with the West is, I think, heavily influenced by a number of actually preventing determinants, including lack of trust, which has got some historical and contemporary sources. And it is also negatively affected by the stated recent, let's say, statements by U.S. Administration officials, including U.S. Secretary of State Blinken. Just I wanted to add one sentence, if I may. Mm-hmm. A couple of days ago, Blinken said that Iran is weeks away from making a nuclear bomb. It's very much surprising. First of all, you know, we have heard this sentence for more than 5 years. So the basic question is, how many weeks are we away from making a bomb, according to this rhetoric?
Okay.
And then this is not a kind of rhetoric that people usually use when they want to start negotiations. This
indeed. Stay with me, Tohid. Let me get Elijah back in on this discussion. Elijah, what is the problem? It seems that it's difficult for these Western countries to make a commitment and to stick with a commitment or agreement. And it appears, as our previous guest said, it's not just the United States, because, of course, the U.S. left the deal completely. But we also saw the European signatories to the deal basically not keeping their side of the bargain either.
What? There are many points. Above all, to start with, we used to think that we in Europe here, we have something that is called the law, and that Europe respects the law. And we saw during the Trump administration that the international law is constantly violated, and Europe has been part of it. So first of all, there is no respect of the international law. Secondly, there is no trust in between the parties. Since 1979, Iran is on sanction is only because Iran is not submitted to the U.S. hegemony. If Iran tomorrow say, we and the Americans are friends, we have no problem with Israel, and we're not going to support the oppressed organization of group or countries around the world, then Iran can dominate the whole Middle East. So today there is a question of no submission. There is no trust. In the West, they still believe, particularly in America, that Iran is negotiating on selling carpets, and it's possible to negotiate and renegotiate the deal. They just can't understand that the deal was signed after years of negotiation, and that's it, take it or leave it. And because in the West, they made the first step to revoke it, just they throw out of the window all the international law, the UN Resolution 2231, and now Biden is saying, well, we revoke the deal, but you have to return first. But what's the guarantee? There is no guarantee. Then who can guarantee to Iran that another president, if Biden returned to the JCPOA, that another president like Trump would say, no, I don't like the deal and I want to change it? There are no guarantees because there is no international law that is respected. And international, we see even the Americans putting judges of the international court on sanction. So everything is permitted in the rule of the jungle. There is no trust. That is the problem.
Well, what about that, Tohid? There is no trust. I mean, why is it that Western countries seem to think that other countries must abide by their will and not the reverse of this? What are the roots of that? What do you make of it?
As your previous guest said, I think in the Europe there is one concept, and that is law. But at the same time, there is this dichotomy of law versus pressure. And if you just take a look at the huge amount of money that exists in transatlantic relations, you would easily understand how influential the United States would be when it comes to implementation of its foreign policy and forcing European countries. So what we have seen so far is the United States brutally forcing its partners to implement some irrelevant, let's say, foreign policy behaviors. And this, at the same time, the United States, specifically during the 4 years of Trump administration, proved that it is good at one job, and that is breach of international agreements. And this is basically not really related to Iran only, but also it contains a wide range of other international agreements that the United States withdraw all of a sudden with no reason. So at the time being, I think United States has got this really big crisis of lack of trust, not only among the international community, but also among its own, let's say, strategic partners, including some close partners like Germany, like France, like Britain and other countries. So in such a situation, I think when it comes to the case of Iran, they should have a really, let's say, tangible and, let's say, realistic understanding of how things work. And under the current circumstances, I think any kind of miscalculation would result in a disastrous, dramatic situation. So Iran's, first of all, Iran has been practicing patience over the past 5 years, and we know that for this patience, there is a limit. For part of these 5 years, I could say some 3 or 4 years, Iran has got full implementation of JCPOA with nothing in return from the Western side. Mm-hmm. And for some other years, we have just a gradual step back from the deal, again in accordance with JCPOA, okay, not outside of it.
Okay.
Yeah. So
Elijah, Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif says that Iran will not return to the negotiating table to talk about the 2015 nuclear deal. The deal has been reached and agreed upon, and now the U.S. must implement its side of the deal if it returns, meaning the lifting of all sanctions on Iran. So where does that leave the situation in your perspective? You've heard what the leader of the revolution has said, and also now the foreign minister is saying on the Iranian side, and now we've also heard from the American side. Where do you see this going?
We heard what Emmanuel Macron said, the president of France, when he's siding by the Americans and changing also the language, which means France was one of the signatories of the JCPOA in 2015, and now Macron is saying that he wants the Saudis and other friends to join in. So he means the Saudis and the Israelis, which is impossible, because the deal was not signed with in the presence of these two. And also, he's talking about the missiles of Iran, and again, is impossible because they are part of the national security of Iran. So altering the JCPOA is off the table for Iran once for good, and it seems the Americans and the French and the German also are just not getting it. They just don't understand that they cannot negotiate because they believe Iran is weak, because Iran has been under very harsh sanctions since Trump arrived to power, particularly since 2018. And these harsh sanctions, the Americans and the Europeans, above all, are saying we're not in a hurry. So it's Iran that is feeling the pain. And why we should relieve it, why we should relieve Iran from this pain, if we can negotiate a better deal, particularly now that we see Iran's capability. So we again see that the Europe more or less doesn't have a will power. It doesn't have a decision per se. When the, as your guest rightly said, when the American decided something, the German showed some sign of rebellion, Trump said, I'm going to put 25% taxes on all your products coming in the US. So they have to submit immediately for the sake of their economy. So really the Europeans just follow the US policy.
Okay. Well, Tohid, Iran is in the middle of celebrating the 42nd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. At the end of the day, do you see the real problem between Iran and some of these Western countries, basically, is the actual existence of the Islamic Republic, and that the Islamic Republic choose to be independent, and these countries have never really come to term with that?
Yeah. Just one follow-up to what your other guest said related to JCPOA, and then I'll be right back to your question. Well, just a quick check into history. Let's just remember that JCPOA was signed and sealed after rounds of negotiations and months of talks. So all the signatories of the deal were in a kind of consensus to limit the scope of the deal and limit the scope of negotiations to one single issue, and that was nuclear issue of Iran, nuclear peaceful program of Iranian country and the Iranian nation, basically. So people there were almost the same people that are already in the administration of Joe Biden. And the thing is that now they're talking about broadening the scope of JCPOA, which was already agreed to be limited on a one specific issue. And now they're trying to, I think, make the situation more and more complicated.
Okay.
Sorry for this long follow-up.
Can you address the other question? Because I only have one minute left.
Yeah.
Only a minute.
Okay, you got it.
Go.
I think the big problem is that Iran is a country that over the past four decades has not agreed to, kind of accept the hegemony of the United States and the West, and has tried to stick to its independent approach and not to get into harmony with this hegemony that has been forced by the United States and its Western partners. And basically, perhaps this is the very key reason behind the current situation and behind the rancorous approach that the United States has taken towards Iran.
Okay, and on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with me on this debate. Elijah Magni, a journalist and political analyst out of Brussels, and Tohid Asadi, academic and Iranian affairs expert out of Tehran. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Appreciate you joining us, and make sure you join us same time next time.
The very first revolution that started with the people, continued with the people, did not change its word, did not change its way, did not decrease or increase its goals, is the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Ayatollah Khamenei.
جانم تپشم سخنم باشد وطنم وطنم ای خان که گوهر خیز بحر وطنم قدمم عشقم سخنم قسمم از عاشقی لبری.
Congratulations on the victory anniversary of the Islamic Revolution.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering the doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman, Allah, who is Al-Mannan.
La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon all the messengers of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and especially the last of them, Muhammadul Mustafa, and his progeny, and those companions who followed their path. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to another program of questions and answers on the Islamic belief. I'm here, Sayyid Wahid Alawi, with my dear scholar, Sayyid Muhsin Naqawi. Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid, and welcome once again to our studio.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
Sayyid, I have received a question, and the person is asking, after the Big Bang, all right, when the universe came into being from one single dot, and is famous for the theory of Big Bang, all those things that has happened in the universe and our galaxy, the Milky Way, all the way to our solar system, everything can be explained with experimental sciences, or what we call empiric sciences, right? Everything can be explained. So why do we say that Allah is the manager, He's the Rabb, He's the manager of the whole universe, of all the realms? And when, for example, when the rain starts to rain, when we have rain, is it Allah who makes that rain to rain, or is it because of the empiric knowledge that we today have, that we know the reasons why it rains? Then where is the role of this Lord, which we say manages everything in empiric science?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, this is a good question, and I think it's from a Muslim brother. Why we say it's not from a Muslim brother? Because what is being taught in the schools, what has been said in the schools, in the West especially, they create doubts in the minds of the people. If you relate to any religion, the first thing they do with the kids is from the beginning they start making doubts. And at the end, they say, like,
I remember that.
They make things confusing for you. And after that, they
science.
Say, yes. And
empiric
after that, they
science.
Say, like, oh, there's nothing. It's all doubtful. We cannot believe on anything. Because
that's relativism, right? That comes after empiric science. Yeah.
It all comes in the schools.
Right.
And they're injecting this into the minds of the kids.
And that's one of those signs of modernism.
Now, the answer is, we never refused Big Bang theory, wholly or solely. We partially accept it. Why? Because Quran also talks about Big Bang.
Yeah.
Quran says in the chapter Anbiya, verse 30, أَوَلَمْ يَرَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا, do not those who disbelieved see, أَنَّ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ, that the heavens and the earth, كَانَتَ رَتْقًا, they were one, they both were one, okay? And
We expanded them.
We expanded them. وفتق وفتقنا هما. فتقنا فتق means to explore, to do explosion, or to make separate. So
we
here Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَفَفَتَقْنَا هُمَا. We separated both of them. That's what Big Bang Theory says. Big Bang Theory says that according to the
universe is expanding.
Yes. According to the calculation, we reached to a point there we can find the evidences that shows that there was a Big Bang. And after that, this universe come to existence. That's what they say. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, those who disbelieve, don't they see that it is me who has done this? Okay? So basically, it's been said in the Quran that we made this separate. We separated the heavens and the earth. وَجَعَلْنَا مِنَ الْمَاءِ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ. And after that, from water, we make everything حَيٌّ, alive. أَفَلَا يُؤْمِنُونَ. Don't you believe? So this is a open challenge from Quran. That Quran is also talking about this explosion, this separation. You call it Big Bang. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is using the word fatakna. Fatakna in the Arabic can be used for the explosion. With the explosion, we have separated, because you know there were the different gases were obviously squeezed together, and then when it was all one, and then there was an explosion. So the point here, when we are talking about the Big Bang Theory, the point is, all right, we accept what you say, that everything has been created with an explosion, but the point is, who did that explosion? That explosion that happened was because of what? And those gases or those things that were there, that made this explosion, who made them? Okay? Who made them? That's the first thing. Now, on top of that, we always said, philosophically, it is proven that this world is the world, or this universe is the world of cause and effect.
Right.
It is not necessary that all the times Allah brings like the hot clouds and the cold clouds next to each other so that it will rain. It's a cause and effect. Once one thing is been created, and if it is in the system will work automatically. Allah do not catches or brings the father and the like mother to have relations so that they can have a baby. It's a cause and effect. He had made those consequences in this relation. He has made those effects in these causes. So these are the causes that we are talking. We cannot say like if everything is going automatically, then there is no use of Allah. The Allah who is the creator, he has made all these things. That's the point. So we are talking from two different points. Someone who's talking about the Big Bang and who's saying like everything is scientifically proven and everything is automatically been done, he's talking on the examples. Whereas there is someone who has done all this, who has made this system. And that's how we, for example, in the theology, right. In the theology, we talk about the reason of discipline. That in this universe, when we see discipline, it means there is someone who is basically on top of it, who's running this, who's managing this, who's looking after this. Why? Because we human beings, being the perfect creation in the universe, who can reach to the, for example, moon, who have seen the stars, who have reached to this Big Bang Theory, who have reached to different theories, who is advancing in technology, this human being, if there is no one on top of them, they are not even following discipline. And in order to have discipline, we have made traffic rules, for example, we have governments, we have police, we have
everything
army.
Is organized. Everything has its rule.
We want someone to
I
be
mean,
on top of us.
The universe with its advanced mathematical physics, I mean, when a person comes forth and tells me that all of this has been created by an unintelligent Big Bang without a brain, okay, or by Mother Nature without a brain, how come that we need God? Then I need to ask, with this advanced system that we have in the nature, with this advanced system that we see in the universe, that everything is at its place, Everything is exactly there where it should be, and otherwise we would not be here on this Earth and our solar system and our galaxy and so forth and so on, all the way back to the Big Bang.